Hey, Senator Graham, welcome back to The Point. Good to have you on board in Columbia.
Thank you, my friend.
Yeah, it's been a while, so I'm glad you're back with us and appreciate you joining us. So the big, beautiful bill, Senator, I got to figure out a couple of things because I'm the guy that you've known a long time, but I'm still married to the liberal wife, and she's asking me to have Lindsay explain the whole Medicaid thing and how the Democrats have been weaponizing that the Republicans want to push grandma off the cliff again.
I'll be glad to.
Explain to my wife why that's not the case.
Well, you have good taste in husband, but otherwise you took a wrong turn in life if you're liberal. So we love your wife, but here's the big, beautiful bill. If you want open borders, this bill is a nightmare for you. We spend $175 billion to keep the border secured. We went from the most illegal crossings when Biden was president to the least in American history, and we want to keep it that way. That $175 billion finishes the wall, puts in fiber optic cables, containment zones. We hire 9,000 more ICE agents. I'm sure your wife would love that. And we create almost 80,000 new detention beds, so we don't have to let people go. The man who murdered Lincoln Riley was in detention. He'd been a legal immigrant come across two or three times. They couldn't hold him because they had no bed space, and he went to Georgia and murdered the lady, and that's sad and horrible and terrible. So we're going to go from 40,000 detention beds to 125,000. We're going to finish the wall. We're going to hire more ICE agents. We're going to give $150 billion to the military, and they're good because they fight to keep your right to be liberal. If you want to be liberal, you can, because our military is protecting your freedoms. And same if you want to be conservative. They get $150 billion. On the tax side, we make the 2017 tax cuts permanent. I am Zeus the budget god. I decided that we're going to stop the practice of having tax cuts expire after 10 years. That's bad for the economy, so I used a current policy baseline, first time ever as budget chairman, to make sure the tax cuts do not expire. You can tell her that in December, if we don't pass this bill, y'all's taxes will go up about $2,200, and that's not good. As to Medicaid, Medicaid was created to help poor children and disabled people. That's good. Obama comes along and he creates a third category of people who are able-bodied, not children, above the poverty level. You put a lot of able-bodied adults on Medicaid, and the match was for every adult you put on Medicaid, the federal government will pay 90 cents. The state will pay 10 cents on a dollar. That's more than you do for disabled children. So what did we say? We put a work requirement in. If you're on Medicaid as an able-bodied adult, you're required now to work 20 hours a week. That's good for you. That's good for the government. And Democrats are squealing and yelling and screaming. I think most Americans would like people on Medicaid to work if they could. If you're disabled, that's fine. You can't work. If you're a child, obviously you can't work. But if you're an able-bodied adult put on Medicaid under the Obama years, we're going to have a work requirement, and that saves a lot of money. There's a scam out there where they tax hospitals and doctors at the state level, take the tax money, and get more federal dollars with it. It's kind of money laundering, and that's a way to have the federal government pay more into Medicaid. Medicaid has grown by 50% in the last 5 years. Every able-bodied adult you put on Medicaid takes away from poor children and the disabled, and that's what we're doing, and that saves about $900 billion. And it, to me, makes a lot of sense.
Is the Senate version going to satisfy your friends in the House?
We save $200 billion more than they do. CBO scored their bill as cutting the government by $1.4 billion. We do $1.6 billion. And we're not cutting anything. We're just reducing the growth rate of Medicaid. But we did better than the House. I am proud of that. We made the tax cuts permanent. The House had them expire after 5 years, some of the business taxes. So the Senate bill was better for business. It's better for fiscal conservatism. And I'm proud of it. I'm proud of my House colleagues. But we're going to send you a bill that cuts spending more, reduces growth more. and we'll have more tax cuts for business to help the economy. We put no, you know, and other things. So I'm proud of the bill. We just got to get fast.
Let's move over to Middle East for a moment. Talk to me about your role. Talk to me about how you worked with President Trump to get the decision on the decision to attack Iran and how that kind of just moved on.
Well, number one, it was his decision, not mine, but I gave him my 2 cents worth. The worst thing in the world, I think, Kevin, is for the Ayatollah to have a nuclear weapon. He's a religious Nazi. He really does mean death to America, death to Israel. You can never let him have a nuclear weapon, and they were getting way too close. Israel decided to stop, to attack. Israel did a lot of damage to the nuclear program, but these three sites that we attacked, we had bombs that the Israelis don't. I am so proud of President Trump for Operation Midnight Hammer. Look in the definition, the dictionary for the definition of obliterate. It means destroy, utterly, wipe out. These three sites were destroyed utterly, and they were wiped out. I talked to President Trump. I said, finish the job. Only we can do this. It will set them back a years. And, Mr. President, if you'll come and help Israel here, you will reset our standing in the world. You will make up for the problems caused by Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan. When Biden withdrew from Afghanistan, people thought throughout the world we were no longer a reliable partner. The bad guys got excited, and Putin went into Ukraine. By helping Israel against Iran, a common threat to both of us, the president reset our standing in the world, and I'm incredibly proud of him. And these sites were obliterated. But unfortunately, the Ayatollah still wants a nuclear weapon, and we've got to deal with that.
So are you satisfied with where things are at with Iran, or would you like to see Israel move forward, what?
I'm going to be talking to the Israelis very soon. I don't mind negotiating with Iran. We're not going to invade Iran. We're not going to send troops on the ground. We're not going to have regime change through use of military force by the military. I'd love for the regime to change, but that's up to the Iranian people. Wouldn't you love for the regime no longer to chant death to America, death to Israel? Time will tell as to what happens. But if you're going to negotiate with the Iranians, I think you should make one demand before you sit down with them. And they're killing their own people right now. They're putting thousands of people in jail. There's a real purge going on. You should say to the Iranians, we will negotiate with you. We will find a way to move forward in a win-win situation. But you have to renounce your desire to destroy Israel. You have to recognize Israel's right to exist. You don't have to agree with Israel's policy. You don't have to like their government. You don't have to like Bibi. But you have to declare that you recognize Israel has a right to exist. You no longer want to destroy the Jewish state. If they can't say that, that tells you all you need to know about negotiations.
We're talking with Lindsey Graham for a few moments. What about the latest with Ukraine and Putin? Obviously, a good NATO meeting.
Yeah, great. Listen, President Trump and I have become really good friends. He is an awesome commander-in-chief. If you're not afraid of him, if you're a bad guy, you're making a huge mistake. He's a great ally to our allies. He's making the bad guys think twice. This big, beautiful bill is going to help the economy. It's going to secure our borders. It's going to help the military, on and on and on. As to Ukraine, I want to end this bloodbath. Putin will not come to the table. He thinks he's winning. And trust me on this, if somebody doesn't stop him, he'll go beyond Ukraine. He said as much. Ukraine is an independent country, but we can work out a deal to end this war, but you got to get Putin to the table. President Trump has reached out to Putin, and I like that. I like trying to solve problems. But I have legislation with 84 co-sponsors that would allow President Trump to put a 500% tariff on any country buying Russian oil and gas and other products that are not helping Ukraine. China and India buy 70% of Russian oil that fuels Putin's war machine. And this bill would give the president a waiver for sanctions that would be at 500%. So he has a tool and leverage over China and India who keep Putin in business. The best way to get Putin to the table and end this bloodbath is to go after his customers who buy his oil, and that's China and India. He is ready for me to send him that bill. I've been working with him since day one, and I hope and pray sometime this summer, early fall, we can end this war through negotiations.
Back home real quick, a couple of things. Jerome Powell, is the clock ticking?
Probably.
Yeah. Is it? Do you think it's time for him to go, or is that not right?
I'm going to leave that to the president. I trust the president's judgment, but probably.
Yeah. How about the tariffs and inflation? That's his saying that that's what's going to cause more inflation. Is it a concern for you with the tariffs?
We're taking more money in last month than any month in the history of the country. Tariffing people who do bad things like Mexico allowing fentanyl into the country. Using tariffs, you know, if you're buying Russian oil, that makes sense. But generally, economy-wide tariffs could be inflationary. They haven't been yet. But so many people and countries are coming to Trump to do deals they would never have done under any other president. BMW is made in South Carolina, Mercedes. All the German car companies met with President Trump. They're talking about investing $70, $80 billion into America. He's got people's attention. So I'm going to give him the time and the space to use tariffs to get better trade deals. I think that is his goal.
Last thing, and you might be the most qualified about this with your JAG history. What about the federal judges and the overruling the president? And explain to me how the balance is
Good
supposed
question.
To be.
Well, no, there is a balance and it's been abused. A federal district court judge, in my opinion, should not be allowed to enjoin policy for the entire country. A universal injunction that applies to the entire United States should not be available to a single federal district court judge. Liberals, and we have in the past, quite frankly, as Republicans, have gone to judges that are, you know, known to be liberal, file lawsuits to enjoin policies of the president. This Supreme Court case in the birthright citizenship case, basically said that a single federal judge cannot issue an universal injunction, which is good. It stops judge shopping. Now, the underlying issue is birthright citizenship. I've worked on immigration. I've tried to be bipartisan. But I do not like the idea that you automatically get citizenship by just being born in America. I think that's a magnet for illegal immigration. And most countries in the world do not grant citizenship by being born. They give visas to high-income Chinese and Russians and other places and other people to come to our country on a tourist visa, to go to a hospital, have the baby so the child is a citizen. People are coming across the border, having children along the border. They're automatically citizens. I think that cheapens citizenship. And I think you need to have a tie to the country other than just being born here. This is not 1865. So I never have believed, if this made much sense, that you should not be granted citizenship just by being born here. It should be a deeper tie to the country.
How do you reestablish the judges stay in your lane and the president gets his lane?
Well, the Supreme Court has helped a lot. This has been an amazing Supreme Court. I don't always agree with them, but they ruled that South Carolina's law saying Medicaid money could not be used for Planned Parenthood to perform abortions, they upheld South Carolina's law. That went all the way to the Supreme Court. It was 6-3. 6-3, limiting a federal district court judge from issuing a universal injunction. I am proud of the role I have played in helping President Trump and Bush create the most conservative court in my lifetime, and we see the benefits of that recently.
As always, it's great visiting with you, Senator. I really appreciate the time.
Pray for our friends in Israel. We've got to get the Ayatollah back in a box. Most dangerous time I've seen since I've been up here. Got to end that war in Ukraine, but President Trump has really risen to the occasion. He's the right man at the right time. And I am the budget chairman, and we're going to deliver to the people of the United States, including your lovely wife, the one big, beautiful bill.
Appreciate it, Lindsey. Thank you, as always.
Thanks, pal.
Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.